Last September, we sailed the high seas with Motorhead on their motorboat cruise ship for 4 days. We played, they played, and a whole bunch of other great bands played too. I had a blast. I got to play Bury Me in Smoke with Down. I got to see High on Fire 2 feet away from my face. We hung out with the Diamond Brothers. I did a podcast with Phil Campbell. And when it was all over, I found myself saying to anyone within earshot that I would do it all over again if asked. One of the bands that made the cruise a lot of fun was Fireball Ministry. Knowing that lead singer, guitarist Jim Rota was going to be on the trip put me at ease. Here was another dyed-in-the-wool rock and roller that I consider being on the same page as myself, and at least I wasn't going to be alone. Jim has been on the podcast before, episode number 78 to be exact, and it was one of the most well-received podcast episodes I've done. I got a lot of great feedback from it. Jim's like podcast gold. He's one of these guys who can lob over rock and roll story after rock and roll story while you sit back and listen, each one better than the other. What made Fireball Ministry's inclusion on the cruise ship even sweeter was the addition of bass maestro Scott Reeder. Scott was in The Obsessed and, of course, more prominently in Caius. He had only recently joined Fireball Ministry and the shows on the boat would be his debut. It was an exciting time for the band, and knowing this factoid, it made it exciting for our camp to watch their set when they finally hit the stage. I count their show as one of the best of the trip, maybe even the best. They killed it. Perhaps it was the new blood that Scott brought to the fold, maybe it was the fact that I hadn't seen Fireball in a while, or maybe it was just because, along with Josh and Jason Diamond, our camps forged a union amidst all the metal allegiance going on around us. During the cruise, when I'd get up in the morning and walk around, I'd notice there wouldn't be too many people up, obviously knocked out from the previous night's festivities. Now, being a morning person means sitting back and quietly relishing the possibilities of the day in solitude. But on a cruise ship, it also means running into other morning people. Running into Jim Rota. We spent a couple of mornings casually shooting the shit, laughing at how rock and roll it was to be up early on Motorhead's cruise, no less, and this episode is more of the same. At the time, since Jim's episode had only been recently uploaded, I thought it would be both a twist and a coup to wrangle Scott Reeder on the episode as well. We recorded this before they played their first show, so the exciting nervousness from them was palpable. Add to this the fact that Jim was co-executive producer of the Foo Fighters HBO series Sonic Highways, and it was only a month away from its television debut. To say there was a lot on Jim's plate is an understatement. Now, I've already uploaded most of the Motorhead Motorboat podcasts. Phil Campbell, the Diamond Brothers, Big J. Okerson, even the Juan Montoya podcast, but I held on to this one because with our new album Fire Music about to be released, I didn't know if I'd have the time to do any podcasts and wanted to keep this one if I needed it to tie me over. I held on to it and held on to it, and now that Sonic Highways has aired, I don't have to edit out any spoilers. You're going to hear the three of us trade stories left and right, but there are a couple of disclaimers that must be stated here. Firstly, there is a noticeable hum throughout the episode. Same hum on the Diamonds episode and the Big J. Okerson episode. This is because we recorded it on a cruise ship out to sea. The hum you hear is the hum we all heard during the entire trip. We got used to it then, and you actually get accustomed to it here too, so it's not that big of a deal. Just thought I'd mention it. Secondly, near the end of the podcast, Scott Reeder tells a story about Dave Ellefson saving lives. And for some reason, it is at this very point that the wave files decided to split and echo. It's never happened to me before. Now, it's a bit eerie considering the subject matter of the story being told, but it might have had something to do with some frequency we passed through while recording the podcast. Weirder stuff has happened. I tried my best to edit around it. It's an incredible story worth listening to, despite the slight echo you may hear. I want to say thanks to everyone who's been listening to the podcast for a while. Thanks to new listeners, new subscribers to the podcast, please leave a rating or a review on iTunes to bump up the podcast's profile. It would be much appreciated if you could. Thanks to Skullcandy Headphones for their Aviator headphones, and thanks to Blue Mic Microphones for their Yeti microphones. Jim Rota and Scott Reeder of Fireball Ministry are this episode's guests on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go out to for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes
damn it from fucked up. Stop playing hangs out. I feel it's absolutely compulsory for you to listen to the Danko Jones podcast. Many times, Liz and I camped out in front of our Fisher 500 hi-fi receiver, hanging on Danko's every word. It's what we used for inspiration when we both starred in Under Milkwood. We even got Peter hooked by the end of the production, the Peter O'Toole, that is. I implore you to go now and listen to Danko expound on subject matter most of us don't even think twice about. Listen to him turn anything into podcast gold. It's simply fantastic.
Danko Jones has a podcast. It's called the Danko Jones Podcast. La da 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 da.
Well, it's nice to have you back, Jim, on the podcast one on one.
Yeah.
And he brought a friend. He brought a friend. It's awesome to have you, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's amazing to be here.
Scott Reeder of Fireball Ministry.
Yes. As much as he wants to be.
Well, yeah.
As long as I pass the audition tomorrow night.
He totally already passed. Don't tell him. You guys aren't nervous. You guys are professionals. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
You got me nervous, though. I overheard you talking upstairs, and you go, yeah, I was just in my room practicing. I'm like,
I was only practicing out of boredom, because I was like, well, we didn't get to get off the boat today because of the weather.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe I should see if my guitars are all right. So then I was like messing around and making sure everything was okay. And then I was like, might as well run through the set lists.
With your guitar?
Yeah. I like hooked up to the iPad and I could play the songs while it goes. Like a total nerd, but. Yeah,
I went through like three songs.
You did the same thing. You said.
I do the same thing.
Really?
iPad, yeah. With the iJam,
yeah.
Converter, whatever. Yeah.
Totally.
I did it air guitar. I played air guitar here.
Oh, right.
I played air guitar and I just mouthed all the words.
That's words practice. It's a whole different practice. You know what I mean? We are the same in that we have to do two jobs. So
everyone else doesn't understand.
I don't know. And when I'm like running through the songs, no offense, Scott, but like I'm like thinking to myself, Emily has the easiest job in the world. That's all I'm thinking. Like I'll miss stuff because I'm always like, why am I? Well, I'm an idiot. Why am I singing? But yeah, no.
Yeah, I always get pegged. Oh, you did this wrong in this song. And I'm like, well, dudes,
yeah.
I was fucking trying to remember, you know.
Yeah, your head's in two different places.
Right. Yeah.
I'm also trying to keep you entertained.
Yeah.
So there's that, too. I mean, you know, it beats the shit out of UPS.
Because of the banter that happens in between songs. Some crazy shit happens, but you got two more songs to go before you stop. You mm-hmm. got to remember that and...
So true.
To think about what you're gonna say about that, you know.
This is like an awesome support group. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody about support. That's totally the truth. Yeah, like, yeah, you're true. Like, oh shit, all right, well, now this isn't quite going the way I thought it was gonna go, so I have to kind of win people over.
Yeah.
So now I have to like reprogram the things I was thinking about, because like you always think about like, oh yeah, I should talk about that if there's a lull, or I should talk about that. But just like you're saying, like. Then something happens when you're up there and you're like, oh, I got to talk about that now. How do I work that into the, you know, songs about the cowboy or whatever the hell you're singing next or whatever it is. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, like.
So I guess we should tell, just in case people don't know, it's like tomorrow night you guys are playing and it's Scott's first.
Yeah.
Scott Reeder's first appearance on a Fireball Ministry stage.
Yeah.
And on a cruise ship.
Oh, yeah, never played a cruise before?
No. We go big. He told us, like, We can't just do a first show. It has to be on something moving. We're like, cruise ship?
I want to play a cruise, guys.
Right, right.
Make it so.
Make it happen, babe.
Maybe I'm speaking too soon, but I think the drinking has been kind of, for the most part, under control. Seeing that we're day two of the cruise.
It's just, it's a lot, but it doesn't seem...
It's a lot.
Nobody seemed to have gotten, like, fired up.
Yeah, I think it's all under control.
I was telling Scott that, like, the woman at the front desk was telling our friends that she was like, this cruise group is so well-behaved. Of all the cruises I've worked on, these are the nicest people so far. So
the staff are stoked. They're coming out. There was just a lady downstairs that said she couldn't take photographs with her uniform on, and she held a T-shirt over so she get a photo. I think when Dawn was playing.
Yeah, we saw one of the like people that were working in the restaurant, a woman get her picture with Joey Belladonna from Anthrax. She was just like, please, I'm not supposed to do this, but will you take your picture with me?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
so,
cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Because I see some of the staff and they're like snickering to each other going, look at these crazy people. I can see it in their eyes, you know. But yeah, it's been good.
But can you imagine a snooty crowd after we missed a port this morning? The snooty normal crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Just been like raising a huge stink. Everybody was stoked.
And speaking of bands, I mean, you and I, side by side, we caught High on Fire last night.
That was amazing.
Which I think might be the highlight of the cruise. Yeah. I'm speaking too soon, but it was amazing.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
Was there.
I was just standing right next to Matt,
yeah,
watching his fingers and what his feet were doing with the effects. And just,
yeah. And getting the real sound from his amp, just blowing in your face.
Yeah.
Like, and the stage itself was like, it was like one of those basement show type stages. Like,
that's fun.
A cruise ship cabaret.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was awesome. And when we started, no one was there. Mm-hmm. Like, there must have been 15 people in the entire room. Yeah. And we thought they were sound checking. We were upstairs and we just said, hey, let's check out their sound check. And it was the fucking show. And everybody was like freaking out. So.
Yeah, there's no like over the intercom like, hey, Down's playing on the Lido deck. Yeah, they should do it. I mean, they come on and tell us stuff. You would think that they would come on and go like, hey. You
know. High on Fire, Starlight Lounge.
7 p.m., don't be late. Yeah, they should do that, but they don't.
No, but it was pretty killer. It was pretty killer last night.
Yeah, I want to see. They play right before us on the, I think, on the outside stage the night we play, or the day, I don't know, whatever.
They're playing on the day. The next time they play is the last day, like 4:30 in the afternoon on the deck.
Then that's, we're right after them.
Then you're golden.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
Well, when we were all waiting for Testament to start playing, all of us were there.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get into it. You're on the podcast, and Scott, you told me the most amazing story, the most amazing Kiss story yesterday. You must retell it on the podcast.
There were some Kiss stories going around yesterday, and mine was my first day at work at Cherokee Studios in Hollywood. I got thrown into a room with Kiss. I was a staff engineer at Cherokee, but I was just running the tape machine. There was another staff engineer that was running the board, and he had things patched in pretty screwy. It's hard to explain technically, but there was a feedback loop. Every time I went in to record, there was a loud in the headphones, and Gene Simmons was getting pissed. And after a few times, the guy at the board's pointing at me like I was the problem. Gene Simmons actually came over, got in my face, and started quizzing me on the buttons of the machine. What does that do? That's the play button. What does that do? That's the record button. Then he gets underneath it. What does that one do? I said, that's the alignment. I don't deal with that stuff. You don't know this machine. After the session, Gene left, and he actually came back in the door and got in my face again and said, you'll probably win a fucking Grammy one of these days, and I'm going to be out in the crowd and I'm going to stand up and say, he pushed the wrong button. And he walked off.
At least he said you'd win a Grammy someday. You know what I mean?
Amazing.
And
what
then
compliment.
The Sound City record won a Grammy in it.
See?
I wasn't there. He wasn't there. But
That's awesome.
That's great. And how's Sonic Highways doing, Jim? Just to recap from the
it's
last
good.
Podcast.
We had that. We've, you know, it's
as he grabs his forehead and runs his hand pulls out some hair.
It's a lot. It's, you know,
your beard is very gray, by the way.
It got white, like, instantly. we're basically making 6 sound cities in the same amount of time.
Oh, wow.
Because it's 8 hours of TV, where Sound City was 2 hours, you know, 2-hour movie. Mm-hmm. So, and these are all 1-hour episodes. The thing is the way that the director likes to work is he likes a lot of, archival material. And archival material takes a while to clear. But we just don't have the time. So it's been challenging. I mean, we'll get it all. The amount of people that are working on just that task alone, let alone the, you know, 4 editors and the 4 assistant editors and, you know, the 12 archival clearance people, not to mention John and myself. Wow. It's pretty, like, and it's just crazy because, you know, the minute you hand in the last episode, it's like, shoo, the whole thing stops because it's over.
And what do? Do you go through, like, post-tour depression?
I don't know. Yeah, you know, that's why I think people, it's what's funny is, like, with in production, you know, like TV and film production, people jump on to gigs really fast afterwards, and a lot of times it's financial, you know, for whatever reason. But so I think sometimes it's just people get, like, antsy because they're like, you know, it's like constant, it's like electricity all the time, and then all of a sudden it's like turning off all the lights. So Scott's in the LA episode. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
I can't give away too much.
I'm dying to see it. But yeah, Scott's in it.
Are you in a studio?
I don't know what that was.
It was like
in front of a gigantic Marshall amp.
A Spinal Tap stage prop, actually.
Oh.
Giant, like, ridiculously oversized Marshall full stack that, like, they had on their stage to make it look like they had, you know, kind of like that Crazy Horse Neil Young tour that they did.
Yeah, with the huge years ago. Yeah, defenders. With, yeah.
So that's what he's sitting in. Each episode ends with the song from that they recorded in that city. And I think the song is available that night, like, for the first time. So, like, after the episode airs, you can get the song. And they're doing that for the first 4 songs because the record the episodes are released in order of the songs on the record. So it's a pretty cool thing.
Wow, that is a marketing genius. Right.
And then if you pre-order the album, you get the songs as they come out. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
wow.
You automatically get them, like, when the show's there.
Wow.
So, yeah. My only thing is that I really hope people, and this you can, if you decide to air this before the 17th, this is
no,
okay to say.
I won't.
But my only thing, I want people, I hope that people don't look at it as just being, like,
a marketing.
Yeah, a way to sell a new Foo Fighters record. Because, like, the stories that are being told and the subject matter and the reason that, especially he wanted to do this, like, is so important to, like, you know, live music and popular music. Like, it's just, we're lucky that he takes the like, it on as his burden, mm-hmm. like, both financially and time-wise, mm-hmm. because, believe me, this shit is not easy to make. So, and it takes up a lot of his time and a lot of their time as a band, you know what I mean? Like, they're committed to the process. It's not some kind of thing where, you know, he's like, make me a TV show, and then walks away for 9 months and then comes back and goes, where's my TV show?
It's a labor of love.
Yeah, totally.
And giving back and giving credit to people that other people may not have heard of. Bad Brains.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, no, this is
actually 17. Yeah, I mean, no. But, like, you know, like, our Chicago episode that will have aired by, that's the first episode, not that you're allowed to know that yet, but that, like, Naked Ray Gun is a huge segment in that show, and, like, why they were important to him and why they should have been important to a lot of people. Like, who the hell is, you know, like, and they're a great band, but, like, who is going out there in today's day and age with that much influence over people and is, like, telling people about bands from the past that they should have heard of?
I think Grohl is doing, like, with Naked Ray Gun, you said, he's done that a bunch of times over the last few years when the opportunity arises, like Blast.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, everyone's talking about Blast. I finally had it with Blast.
Yeah.
I just tweeted something like, last month, Nobody knows. No one knew who Blast was. Like, Dave Grohl has something to do with this album, and everyone's like, Blast! And I use the exclamation point that they use on their actual logo.
Yeah.
But it's just everyone around me was talking about Blast.
And to his credit, man, like, you know, Mike and Clifford didn't even go to him. It was like, I guess Greg Anderson from Southern Lord. That label, Southern Lord, he got a hold of the masters for that record, and then, you know, Greg had suggested, well, why don't we see if we can mix it out at Dave's studio, or the Foo Fighters studio, and you know, they came in and Greg called on their behalf because they were like too embarrassed to do it, and you know, Dave was like, yeah, come mix it for free, like you don't have to pay to use the place, just come mix it. Yeah. Like, I want to hear it. Like, that was the thing, you know?
Right.
Like, I went down there the first night, and he was there. Like, Dave was sitting there, like, ready to hear it, all amped up like a fan. So that's what I mean, like...
That's cool.
People can, you know, I know that some people, like, not too many people, but some people definitely try to, you know, shit-talk him or say that he's, you know, like, not... It's so refreshingly genuine.
I mean, what he did with Probot, too. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
He's elevated my life every step of the way. Back to the Caius days, I joined Caius before Blues for the Red Sun came out, and Nirvana was blowing up in 92, and when he was on tour, he would go buy every copy of Blues for the Red Sun at record stores and give them to people that he thought should hear it, which led to, a tour with Metallica, you know, stuff like that, and press, and MTV, and nobody would have heard of us maybe if it weren't for Dave. And then he brings me back in for the Sound City thing, and that's one of the biggest things I've ever done. And now the Sonic Highways thing, I don't even know what's
involved. It's pretty gnarly.
You know,
the episode's awesome. I know, I'm telling him this, and he's like in it and dying to see
it. Even see it.
Yeah, but like,
you look great, babe.
Yeah. But when anybody disses Dave, I'm like ready to throw down.
Yeah
no, no way. I mean, my whole thing about Blast was, well, maybe we were on, because we were on tour with Alice in Chains, and that guy who sings for Alice in Chains, that guy, I mean, I can't remember his name, but the singer of Alice in Chains was in Blast.
Oh, William.
And, yeah, and there was like a couple of people in our camp who were like, Blast, Blast. I'm like, oh, God damn it, Blast. Nobody knew about Blast last month. I'm fucking mad.
Well, that's the music nerd in you, because there's that somewhere deep inside. You don't want anybody to know what don't you claim that's mine. I love that first. That's my thing. You can't love it. We all have that a little bit.
It's funny, because then on that tour, we ran into Mike Inez.
Yeah, who's bass player.
Yeah, and he was actually buying the album.
That's cool.
For William. Like, that's awesome. He had it under his arm, and I was just like, hey, the singer in your band is on that, you know, he was in that band. He was looking at me like, yeah, like, I know that. I was just like, I couldn't even go, like, I'm fucking joking. We just met. It's the first thing I said to him. Hey man, did you know that
check it out.
And he's like, cool.
Nice meeting you, kid.
Never saw him again after that on the tour. But whatever. But that's cool. I mean, Dave Grohl is Dave Grohl. I mean, and the Probot thing is like, for me, that was a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, you could tell that was a guy who knew what he was doing, knew who to pick. His picks were like almost like what I would have picked, you know, like the singers that he got to guest on it. I was so envious of that. I was like, oh, well, someone did it then. Like, what can we do?
But again, the crazy thing about that, and the thing that he probably doesn't let anybody know or doesn't ever talk about, is like, he sent like the track and money to those singers, and was like, here's the track, here's the money to go to a studio and sing on it, and then send it back to me. That's how committed he was to that project.
But every track was that singer's best song that they never wrote for their band.
Yeah,
it was genius.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing.
The Lemmy one, the song "Shake Your Blood." I have two funny stories about that. Lemmy, for whatever reason, I used to live right over by Grandmaster Recorders. It's a studio in Hollywood. And Nick, the way I met Dave was through Nick Raskulinek, a producer who did 2.5 of our records and did like 3 records for the Foo Fighters, I think. Nick's gone on to do like Rush. And
he did one of ours.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, you know Nick.
He's a great hang.
Yeah. So he hits me up. At the time, there was a bass player in our band named Janice Tanaka who played a Rickenbacker, and we had it because she was actually on tour playing with Pink, and it was at my old apartment. Anyway, it was a big setup for hopefully a funny story. So Nick calls me, and like out of desperation, he's like, "Dude, do you have Janice's bass at your house by any chance?" And I was like, "You know what's weird?" No, he was like, "Do you have it on hand?" And I was like, "You know what's weird? It's like right in my hall closet." And he's like, "No way." He's like, "Please bring it to the studio to Grandmaster." And I'm like, "Why? Lemmy doesn't have a bass." And he goes, "No, they're all in South Africa." And I was like, "Okay, you can explain when I get there." So I grabbed Janice. I called Janice. And I was like, "Hey, I know you're on tour and you left me with your bass, but Lemmy wants to borrow it for the day." And she was like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah." So anyway, she's like, "Yeah, whatever." She goes, "Tell me he has to sign it." So I brought it over to the studio. And he hadn't gotten there yet. And you know, like, when you're in the studio and it's someone else's record, you're always like, "Eh, I want to get out of here. It's not my thing." You know, it's like being in the room when someone else is
taking
sex.
A shit.
Yeah, or taking a shit. Yeah. So you're like, "I gotta get out of here." So I just dropped the bass off. And I remember I went home and, like, maybe 3 hours go by, if that. And Nick calls me. He's like, "Hey, man, you want to come pick up Janice's bass?" And I was like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, we're done." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well," he's like, "Dave had some of the tracks done already." And he goes, "Basically, Lemmy came in and listened to it. And then he, like, said, 'Let me play bass on it.'" And he's like, "We did 2 passes of his bass, and it was finished." And he goes, "And then he said, 'I'm going to go upstairs in the lounge and write the words.'" And he's like, he went up there for maybe 20 minutes, and he came down, and he sang the song twice, and then we were finished.
Wow.
It's like the rest of the time we just spent bullshitting.
Wow.
And he's like, "So it's done." So that's how fast that came together.
Wow.
And he signed the back of Janice's headstock. Like, "Thanks for the loan," or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Wow. That is cool.
Yeah. There was this other time, another Lemmy story, just because we're on the boat. Nate from the Foo Fighters told me that they were like somewhere in Europe, and they like were on stage and they played Shake Your Butt. Like, Lemmy was at the show and they were like, "Come out and play Shake Your Butt, it'll be awesome." So they were like, "Nate will just play bass, like, just sing it, yeah, we want, you know, like, make try and make it easier for him or whatever."
Yeah.
So he's like, "Okay, cool." And then he comes out and Nate's like, "I'm playing this, you know, we're playing the song," and I'm like playing it, and then like at one point, like in the song, Lemmy looks over at me and he looks kind of pissed, and then like I was like, "Oh sh-." And then he's like, then it made me even more self-conscious. It's like the song gets over, and as he's walking off the stage, he looks at me and he goes, "Next time, why don't you try learning the song?"
Wow.
Nate was like, crush.
Oh, that is crushing.
Yeah, pretty funny.
I don't think they're doing it anymore, but Kill by Death in the set list is usually the song where they get like one of the bands to sing Kill by Death. And I didn't know this. And then in 06, we were playing Hellfest and we were hanging with Phil Campbell. And he goes, you want to sing Kill by Death tonight with Lemmy? I'm like, what? That's like my favorite Motorhead song. Yeah, sure. I'm down. And I was like, whatever. And he goes, come on, let's go ask Lem. Yeah, okay, let's go meet Lemmy, man. And and he opens the door and Lemmy's with a friend.
Right.
And all I remember is he opens the door, Phil opens the door, and Lemmy just turns around going, "Get the fuck out of here!" All right, well, gotta ask him. Like, I thought that was it. But eventually I got up later that evening and I sung Kill by Death, but I was so nervous to sing with him that I didn't know that I could take center stage. I was like, well, I don't want to take center stage. That's Lemmy's stage.
Mm-hmm.
So every time Lemmy would come over to center stage, I would go to Phil. But what Lemmy, like, I didn't realize, he wanted to, like, bro down and, like, rub shoulders and stuff.
Like Perry and Tyler it?
Yeah, exactly. And I was so mad at myself.
Well, it's like, hey, that's out of, yeah, you were being respectful.
Yeah,
that's,
I was being like, respectful, yeah. But it looked like I was like scared of the guy. So the next time I got another, I got the second time, got ass. I'm like, I'm fucking doing it. Yeah, man. Yeah. I was like, yeah. So, but then there, yeah, I got another story. I can't tell that story, but
yeah,
but it was awesome. And then since then, I'm actually on the Lemmy Blu-ray disc where I sung.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's great. Now I'm like, you still get super nervous, but, you know.
Yeah. Rock and roll dreams, man.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, like, I saw him walking around last night.
Oh, really?
And it's still, like, super.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like seeing a fucking hell unicorn or something.
Yeah. No matter how, you know.
I was at, not to interrupt you, but I was at Dave one night a few years ago. Dave got like some tickets or asked to come down. Metallica played like some benefit gig at the Wiltern for like the Silver Lake Music School or something. And he's like, hey, dude, you want to go see Metallica at the Wiltern? I'm like, sure. And we went.
Wow.
Yeah. And then after, he was like, you want to go drink at the Rainbow with Lemmy? And I'm like, yes. And, we sat down and we had played with Motorhead a couple times, and the one time was right after they had kicked a band off the tour and they needed somebody to fill in, and they called us and we went out and did it. You know, you're like, they didn't, whatever reason, we were like, drop everything and go. So anyway, I sat down with him and I was like, hey man, I'm Dave's friend Jim. And he goes, you play in a band? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, you played with us when we kicked this band, I don't want to say, off the tour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's right. And I was like totally floored that he just even remembered that much.
Yeah.
So it got to the point in the night where I was so drunk that I remember having a conversation with him where I was like, dude, Orgasmatron, those are your best fucking words. And he's like, no, they're not. And I'm like, how could you say that? I'm like, there's no fucking way. You can't think that. I know you think. And he's like, they're not. And I'm like, what are the best words you ever wrote then? And he's like, march or die. And I'm like, are you fucking crazy? I'm like, and he starts mouthing, like, you know, like, just like, you know, whatever, like saying the words to march or die. And I'm like, nope. Nope. Still not as good as Orgasmatron. And he's like, well, what other song? What other song? He's asked me like another song. And I was like, you know, you're going to be surprised. And he goes, what? And I was like, dude, don't believe a word off of the record Overnight Sensation. He looked at me like I was nuts. He's like, what? And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, why don't you guys ever play that live? And he goes, who the hell's going to sing the backups? Phil? And then that was the end of our conversation. The guy felt weird.
Well, that leads me into another Lemmy story. I mean, this is turning... I mean, it's a motorboat.
Yeah, we're on the motorboat.
Well, there was one time I was called in while we were on tour of them to sing with Lemmy, Born to Raise Hell. And Phil Campbell came up with the idea. He just came up to me. He goes, hey, you want to sing Born to Raise Hell tonight with Lemmy? I'm like, why, yeah, I'll always say yes, like,
yeah,
no matter what it is.
You don't have to put a question mark at the end of the sentence.
No matter how hard it is, I'll fucking do it. And so I practiced. And he goes, well, you gotta go into Lemmy's dressing room. He wants to know if you know it. I'm like, oh, fucking
gonna get quizzed
hell
right now.
So I went into like this like fucking full on like 2 hour like tutorial where I made sure like I knew every word. So I went into Lemmy's dressing room, and he's just sitting there by the slot machine thing he's got. And just like it's in the movie, he's got his slot machine, and he's sitting there with his iPod, like, speakers there, too. He presses the iPod, and we're listening to the song, and I'm sitting right across from him in his dressing room, and I'm singing the song to him, and he's mouthing it with me. And we're both singing it to each other. I was so fucking nervous. And Phil, that I realized because Phil was asked to sing, they put that in the set, and Phil had to do the backups, and he didn't want to sing it.
Yeah.
So he pawned it off.
What's with the Phil not singing thing?
I don't know.
It's a thing.
Yeah, I don't
know. Clearly.
I don't know what it is. And then, of course, you get on stage, and this is more than me just going, killed by death. Like, yeah. Anyone could do it. But then you realize the Motorhead stage is the loudest. It's mm-hmm. so fucking loud. You can't hear shit all. So I couldn't hear my monitors. And so, of course, someone decides to YouTube that.
Right, yeah.
And all the comments are like that Enrique Iglesias. Remember that thing on Howard Stern?
Sure, yeah.
Like, oh, he can't sing. Vocal. Yeah. Yeah, he can't sing.
Like,
I can't
Linda McCartney.
Yeah. I couldn't hear myself. That's Courtney why I didn't Love. Know what key or where the song was. And I was just going, you know, like I didn't know where I was. Where I was. This guy can't sing. So, whatever. Yeah. It just sucks, though, because a friend of the family read all the comments on that.
Whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Get up and do it. That's yeah. what I always say. I was like, right before you're about to hit send on your internet comment, tonight go to a club and get on a stage.
Yeah.
Then, the day after that, make all the comments you want.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, so.
That's how I feel. I've only ever had, like, one... We only ever toured with one band where, from the stage, like, the crowds were so hard to win over that I finally was just, like, I would just, you know, it became part of, like, the banter, you know, like, where it was just, like, you know, especially if it got, like, you know, shitty. This band Opeth, who I love, and I love those guys, and Michael wanted to take us on tour, and so I'm eternally grateful.
They're amazing.
Yeah, awesome dudes. So this is by no means no slight against that band in any way, but their crowd, especially in like 2007 or 4 or 5, whenever we toured with them, I don't even remember, was particularly rough. Because we sound like a 70s hard rock band. Like, that's what our band sounds like, in case you don't know that out there. And that didn't go over well with, like, you know, black metal mixed with Tool, which, you know, for the layman, that's kind of what they sound like.
You're not too far off the mark.
So there was just nights where it was just, like, so brutal. Like, people...
I saw that tour with you guys.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
right.
When Jason was playing bass.
Yeah,
for
at
you.
The docks.
It was at the Opera House.
Oh, right.
Because I remember the underground.
That's right. I totally remember that.
Yeah.
That was brutal for us.
You know, and it sucks that their audience treated you like that, because all those dudes in that band they loved that they went to see that night are all old rock dudes.
Oh, totally.
Those guys...
Their new record sounds like Atomic Rooster, for crying out loud. Like, they're totally down.
He's going for it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, and he, you know, he walks on stage with a Whitesnake t-shirt.
Yeah, it's like he's not afraid, but like, yeah, those kids were just, it was like trench coat mafia shit. And
yeah.
Every night, they just like, they were always like one dude, and finally it got to the point, I sort of never forget, we were like in Wolverhampton in Massachusetts, like right outside of Boston. There's that, like, there's a venue where all the metal shows happen.
I don't know.
You have to have played there.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I forget the name of it, but we were there, and I was just finally like, you know what, man? Like, fucking, any one of you assholes wants to make a comment, every member of this band, including the chick, is available after the show backstage. So the next one that opens their fucking mouth better be opening it backstage to one of our faces. And I'll tell you what. The chick in our band could kick any one of your fucking asses, so try it out without any of us. And sure enough, like, I got, like, the cops came to the dressing room, and they were like, there was somebody in the audience that said that you threatened them. I'm like, oh my god, you gotta be kidding me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. No. Rock and roll life, man.
I mean, I love Opeth.
Yeah, amazing guys. Band.
Yeah, so it's all.
I would stand on the side of the stage. There's that one song they would play last every time. That
Deliverance?
Was, yeah.
Yeah.
And just when he does this shit with the drums, and then it's all like crazy. There's like, yeah, it's so crazily syncopated with everybody.
It's
that
so
you're cool. Like, how the hell are you guys doing this? And every night we'd hear it like start and be like, run from wherever we were in the club to the side of the stage to watch it happen.
It's pretty.
It was like it must have been like seeing Genesis was like you know, like old Genesis. We always tell it to John, because John, our drummer, is not like the biggest metal fan in the world, and he loves all the prog stuff from the 70s. He's a little bit older than me, but he like, that's his favorite stuff, and he loved watching that every night too. Like, yeah. He was totally drawn in. So
yeah. Anyway. Yeah, well, last time Opeth came through, or maybe time before, was with Mastodon.
Yeah.
Ghost Mastodon and Opeth. And I'm like, how are you going to play after Mastodon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're kind of the kings of the scene, and they're And Opeth just wiped the floor.
Yeah, they held it, man. I saw that too at Universal in L.A.
They just held it. They owned just, it so hard.
Yeah, he's amazing. Michael's awesome,
and he's such a great frontman. And yeah. People don't realize he's a good frontman, like funny and mm-hmm. he's self-deprecating. Got a sense of humor. Yeah, wicked sense of humor. It's really great. It's great.
Opeth, we love you. I don't have a Lemmy story, but I have a boat. Related story with Dave Ellefson.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
I was at base camp at Warwick headquarters and the factory 2 weeks ago, and there were some heavy, heavy players out there. Chuck Rainey, who played on Steely Dan stuff, some of the grooviest shit ever. Rob from Metallica, Dave Ellefson, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on and on and on. Victor Wooten. We had a big party on the Saturday. 2 o'clock in the morning, we get on a bus. A lot of the professors and a lot of the VIPs back to the Frankfurt airport. It was a four-hour drive. And everybody was all talking in the beginning, and gradually everybody faded out. And I was asleep. I awoke to people screaming, just like blood-curdling loud. I was like, what the fuck? I opened my eyes. I was about a third of the way back on the bus. I see out the front window. We're zooming down the Autobahn. There's a curve ahead, and we're going straight. And Dave Ellefson had been sitting in the back, but for some reason, he crept up to the front, and he was wide awake. And I'm just yelling at the top of my lungs. I lost my voice in about 2 seconds. I was yelling so loud. Dave jumped up, actually grabbed the wheel, and kept us on the road. We were about to crash through a guardrail and go flying off into a gully before a forest. He saved the lives of 30 or 40 insanely, not myself included, but talented bass players. and drummers. Chester Thompson was sitting by me, Alfonso Johnson from Santana and Weather Report, Stephen Bailey in the back, Victor Wooten and his brother Reggie and his son Adam, my friend Nick Shingelos from Job for a Cowboy and Cephalic Carnage, and, Ryan Martini from Mudvayne. A lot of friends and family on that bus that almost got creamed. And Dave Ellefson, that's on this boat right now.
Good luck, Charm.
Saved everybody, literally saved our lives. And I'm sure he's going to be all humble about it. Oh, it was nothing. I was just sitting there. I told him in an email that I was going to buy him drinks for the rest of his life, and then I found out last night he doesn't drink. So
hey,
maybe a lifetime gift card to Starbucks or something. Wow.
And did that story make any... I haven't heard that.
I think it's been kind of... You know, everybody's so excited about the base camp and...
Yeah, they probably didn't want bad press for the base camp.
But it's not...
It has nothing to do with the base camp.
The base camp. It has everything to do with whoever was driving.
Yeah, the driving.
The shitty thing about it is that, you know, God forbid, the only reason why they would have reported on it is if something had happened, but because it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But the thing worth reporting is that Dave Ellefson is a
saved
hero.
Everybody, yeah, of course. But they don't... That's not...
Well, the there were some journalists on the bus. Ed Friedlander from...
Oh, yeah.
Bass Player Magazine was on the bus, so we'll see what happens in the next issue of Bass
Dave
Player
Ellefson.
Magazine.
Yeah. Bass Player of the Year!
Yeah.
Mega Life should be the headline.
Mega Life. Whoa. Yeah, we go.
Yeah.
It was heavy. It's been a life-changing experience for me. I've appreciated every moment. Petty things are not bothering me at this moment in my life. It was heavy. You know,
the airplane mode that we have to go on, and the
right exactly.
You're just like whatever.
Yeah, everybody whined about their cell phones not working. You're like, dude, whatever.
I didn't mind the baby next to me on the airplane kicking me, but when he started screaming bloody murder while we were landing, that was like,
oh, even a near death experience cannot. I mean, that's just so great. I mean, that's nice to hear about Dave Ellefson. Yeah. Makes me maybe I can. He seems more approachable to me. Maybe I can go up to him now.
He's really
nice. I haven't seen him on the boat yet, but
I saw
him. I'm gonna hug
tonight. They're playing him. There's like the Metal Allegiance show, so we should move. I want to go to that.
Yeah,
because hey, actually, we all have a meet and greet with the Metal Allegiance guys. So you're gonna see Allison there if he shows up.
That's like Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's gonna be a
I think
it's with Down, Metal Allegiance, us and you guys.
Yeah. Perfect.
So, yeah, that's cool. I think it'll be me in the lineup too, going 80 man. No one's over there at our side. I thought I could grab some autographs and photos.
Hey, dude.
I'll be in the line of two. But yeah, he'll be there for Metal Allegiance.
I did a thing at, in the Dean Guitars booth one year, and it was... This is why my band never got as popular as it should have. This story right here. Here it comes. I got asked to do like a signing at the Dean Guitars booth. And I was like, sure. And then I had like the whole thing. Panel of me pointing my finger and playing the guitar like bleh. And I got to the booth and I'm sitting in the room and I asked my rep at the time, I'm like, who else is signing today? And they're like, oh, well, we have I forget who it was, like Michelangelo, you know, whoever, like, you know, I forget who else, but they were like, and Michael Schenker. And I'm like, I'm not gonna sit there with that. And they were like, why? And I'm like, the hell business do I have doing signing anything next to fucking Michael Schenker? And they were like, well, you know, you're still welcome to. I'm like, I was like, Tony, I can't. It's stupid. It's a stupid thing. It's going to be like, they're going to be like, here, like, people are going to be asking me to hold Michael, like, their jackets while Michael Schenker signs their stuff. I was like, there's no need for that. So I didn't do the signing. But I got something signed by Michael Schenker.
Need a selfie.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Let's do it.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.